The 3HL, coming up this afternoon from 3 to 6 p.m. Now it's time for Blaine and Mickey on 104.5 The Zone.
Let's do this, Blaine and Mickey, on a Wednesday right here on 104.5 The Zone. Appreciate everybody joining us today. Historic day today. That is, with the inauguration going on. I know a lot of you have been paying attention to that, watching that today. Always an amazing thing to watch. I know there's a lot of people who feel a lot of ways watching it, but an amazing thing always to watch when it happens each and every 4 years. But let's talk some sports now, why don't we? We're going to do that until 3 o'clock today. Blaine Bishop, Mickey Ryan, David Reed producing today. It was interesting, Blaine, last night I looked at social media and I saw A.J. Brown. People started posting all these videos and he's in a hospital gown and he was saying all this stuff. But it appeared to be post-surgery, and he said he had surgery on both knees. He said he should have been out after week two, but he said, but I kept going and I made the Pro Bowl. Actually finished the year with 70 catches, 1,075 yards and 11 touchdowns. He also had a kickoff return touchdown. I mean, an amazing performance. And when a guy says, I really wasn't supposed to play after week two, but I just kept playing. I mean, we don't have the details on that. We just have a guy in a surgical gown saying that's what happened. But Titans fans already loved A.J. Brown. I think there's no doubt they're going to love him even more when they see a guy who's working that hard to stay on the field and contribute to the team that drafted him.
He scored a kickoff touchdown?
Yeah, remember an onside kick.
They kicked onside kick. Yeah. Okay, yeah, he did. That was a great play. That was a great play. I wish I could have done something like that. But, I think he was on Instagram and he kind of posted he was having surgery. That was one of my questions nobody talks about. I asked Coach Mack about all the guys who are going to be getting surgeries afterwards. And it's kind of customary part for the course, really. So, I think I got a scope after every season in the National Football League. That's just called a cleanup. A regular person, that's 9 weeks of rehab. You wouldn't have played in those games. So that was it kind of explains why he wasn't practice. I'm sure some other guys have gotten surgery too as well. But I mean, it's interesting that they didn't post.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, so that tells you a little bit of, the makeup of the actual person. Some thrives on attention and explaining to everybody what's going on. And some people say, nah, it's no big deal. This is what I do for a living. But it's a different era, for social media. Yeah. So, hey, whatever floats your boat.
It's funny because you mentioned that. Let's say that anybody listening to us right now looked at Facebook and their, Uncle Steve said, yeah, man, I hurt my knee at work. They say I got to have surgery. Boy, people be piling on and praying for you, mm-hmm. cooking them dinner and taking them meals and, that your church group is going to be involved. Well, for an NFL player, I mean, like you said, I probably had surgery after every season. That's anytime somebody starts saying like, well, if I'd been out there, I would have done this. And in high school, you can't compare that to, people just have to stop that. I mean, it's a whole different world. It's a world of pain that most of us would never understand. Mm-hmm. And as soon as the season starts, everybody is, Coach Mack says this a lot. Everybody's injured in some way. By the time you get to the season, everybody is playing with a thing or more than one. Literally something that requires surgery probably to fix. And like you said, for some guys, I mean, Philip Rivers is retiring and there's a lot of talk about, gosh, it's been however 13, 14 years ago, they played in the AFC Championship game and he had ACL and meniscus surgery. And then he went out the next week
Yeah.
He played in the game.
That's unheard. I mean, that's I got to do it for my guys, my team. Yeah. Depending on it, just like Mahomes, whether he looks good or not, he will be playing. Unless there's a misstep throughout this week where he goes out to practice and he feels a little lightheaded again, and that could actually happen. But if everything is par for the course, he's gonna be out there. So, I mean, he will go to the extreme of of actually lying if he can.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt.
And college football is no different. Those people are so big and so fast. I mean, I can remember talking to the team doctors at Arkansas State just about something along the lines of, boy, the season's over. Do you guys get to catch your breath at all? And they're like, no, I mean, we can't tell you because they didn't tell me, but they said, we got surgeries lined up for more of these kids than you would ever believe. You wouldn't believe how many of them have a surgery lined up. And again, they didn't tell me names and I didn't ask them, but I said, really? And they go, oh my gosh, it's no different than, I mean, they said, you covered the Titans, right? Didn't those guys get surgery after the season? I said, yeah, lots of them. They said, no different here. You wouldn't believe how many of these kids have to have surgery. And Blaine,
that is the trend, but I can't say this. That is no question. I completely agree with that. But I can say from my own personal experience, I had no surgeries and hardly ever. I think I had a sprained ankle in college.
Wow.
That's it. I get to the pros, I've had 11 surgeries.
Oh, my gosh.
And what I'm getting at is not to talk about the 11 surgeries. The physicality and the desperation and the contact and the guys being bigger, stronger, faster is off the charts. I mean, yep. You said it. You can't really describe it. But you're seeing more and more, whatever level college you're playing, that they're getting a lot more surgeries in college than my time. And so it's a different world out there. And I don't know. There's some things that I think some players now in the college and maybe even in high school, you know, don't understand. And that is, you know, we went. You remember the drill called the monkey roll?
And we may call it something.
You know, where three guys are all tumbling over each other and they go back and forth.
Yeah.
That's called the monkey roll. I give it that term. It may be called something else at other places. Right. So get what you learn out of that, besides getting dizzy and feel like you're lightheaded and hitting the ground, you learn how to actually fall and protect yourself. Mm-hmm. I think some fundamental drills like this, they don't do anymore. And I don't think kids, then leading up to adults, understand how to actually fall and try to keep yourself out of compromising positions at times. Some are unpreventable. And some of them, you know, you turn ACLs with guys just stopping and playing and breaking because it's so much bigger and stronger. Well, I mean, you know, maybe you should have slowed down on the process of how much weight you're lifting too. I mean, all at the same time. But, you know, accidents happen. So I think there's a part of that that's a little bit is missing in the game. I think it's overlooked.
Yeah.
But there'll be a laundry list of Titans players. As I asked Coach Mack, and naturally he couldn't divulge any of that information. But guys are playing through a lot of different things. So let's just go look at, you know, if you want to, the Titans injury report and who was not practicing most of the weeks. I can think of Dennis Kelly, the Undertaker, immediately off the top of my head. So that means guaranteed he kept saying knee. Oh, he's getting a scope.
Well, Saffold's the guy who hardly ever practices, yeah.
Yeah, and so he had, remember, he had a toe or a foot or something. Yeah, so these guys, I mean, even last year, remember Corey Davis, nobody knew he had a foot-toe injury. He had surgery.
Yeah.
Yeah, see? But you can't go out there, oh, my toe. Nope. Everybody's healthy once you turn on the bright lights. Don't nobody care about any of that stuff. Don't nobody even think about it. So either go out there and play with it or you don't.
Yeah, we've had this discussion several times where I said, you know, that guy couldn't have been 100%. You said, does it matter? If you suit up and you say, I'm going to play, then you get to play like you're 100%. There's no excuses. Once you take the field, zero excuses. Doesn't matter if you're hurt or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I could say, some raindrop dropped in my eyeball when, you know, T.O. jumped over my head and caught the ball with Randy Moss. Oh, man, it's a sweat guy. Oh, my. No, I'm just kidding. But, yeah, there are no excuses. Nobody, you know, as, you know, players know, but, you know, fan bases and everything else, they don't know if a guy's injured or not. Because you warm up and if you say, hey, I can go, then par for the course then.
And I know for you, because you've told this story before, I said, what made you finally decide that that's it? You know, how do you make a call like that? And I want to say that you told me I didn't want to have another surgery.
Well, that was going into the season, my last season there in Philadelphia. I said, if I have to have another surgery, then I'm probably not going to be able to play again because I can't play at the level I want to. So ultimately, I could say I made the decision, but my body told me and the NFL told me this is it. Yeah. You know, so yeah, it was just going to be way too much to rehab abductus longus muscle that you have to have surgery on, which is your groin area. So I started learning anatomy a little bit on my body.
Dr. Blaine.
Yeah. So, and then the part of then rehabbing, then trying to train and then get on the field and play at a high level, it was almost impossible with me at year going into year 11. So yeah, it was pretty much either the league ends you or you decide to, this is it. Mm-hmm. So I kind of works hand in hand. I had probably about three teams or so still calling me, see if I was interested. But once I had it set in my mind that it's over,
yeah,
you can't really go back from that. Because I thought about it, and I go, I'm not all in. I'm not in. Next thing you know, I'm up here on the field broadcasting in the cold in New England.
Yeah. And for a lot of guys, football is about to tell them you're done. You know, for the season's over, except for four teams, and even some of those guys, this will be the last time they ever play. It's crazy to think, you know, people always say, well, this team's never going to be the same once everybody puts their stuff in a trash bag and walks out. And that's true. Some guys are going to go play for other teams. For others, they may never, maybe they got to play one game or five, or maybe they played 10 years. But football is the one rare game. Most of the time, you don't say, I'm done. It says, you're done.
Yeah.
You know, you can't play church league football. You can go play basketball forever if you want to, tennis, softball, something like baseball. Football, no. You know, tackle football, you play it until it says you're done. Either you're not good enough to go to the next level, you're not good enough to stay at the next level, or your body just says, hey, man, we're finished. I can't carry you anymore. We're done.
And then the league tells you you're done.
Yeah, real quick after that.
That's just some kind of work hand in hand. So, yeah, I don't know if I had that own individual decision on my own. But if I tried to say, I may want to come in, they were like, nah, we will go.
Yeah. All right, when we come back, we'll have Dennis Dodd. Let's dive into the balls, and we'll get an outside perspective. We'll get an inside perspective coming up with Josh Ward at 2:15. But Dennis Dodd from CBS Sports next on Blaine and Mickey on 104.5 The Zone. Blaine and Mickey on 104.5 The Zone. Happy Wednesday to everybody. Let's jump on board with the name that you know, because he's been covering college football for a long time now. Dennis Dodd from CBS Sports, one of the OGs. Dennis, thanks for taking the time today to join us.
Blaine, Mickey, how are you guys? Glad to be here.
Yeah, thanks.
Doing fantastic. So let's start with this. I was trying to, with all that's going on in the state of Tennessee and on Rocky Top, we get you on the show, and I'm thinking, how do I even phrase this question? And I wrote this down. We all like to compare things like, boy, I haven't seen anything like this since this time. Or, gosh, the last situation I remember like this was at this place. Can you even think of anything to compare with what we're seeing right now at Tennessee?
Yeah, the last time it happened at Tennessee. when a Twitter mob kept a very capable coach from being hired. How would Tennessee look right now? Just you know, competency wise, lowering the temperature, as they say in Washington, with Greg Schiano right now. I think they'd be pretty darn good. They wouldn't be cheating. You know, they'd have their share of wins. Greg Schiano's a proven coach. Something they need right now.
Home with Dennis Dodd from CBS Sports, talking college football and latest from Knoxville.
Yeah, Dennis. Yeah, man. How far does this put Tennessee football back in years in the program, or does it at all?
I think the biggest thing is, yeah, it does. As I wrote, I think the biggest thing is that, look, no matter who you settle on, let's say you get an AD real quick and you get a coach, you know, you're going to have to go over that hurdle of having what looks like a significant NCAA case in front of you. And the NCAA laid off a bunch of people last year. They laid off a bunch of people in enforcement, so they're behind there. So processing the case is going to be a problem. So that combined with the fact that the NCAA is distracted by the basketball scandal, those cases, only one of those has been decided in the 40 months since they had the announcement. You put all that in a blender, I think it's 2 years before they even find out what they get. You know, I'm looking at these cases. Kansas, is going to be going on 3 years this fall, Kansas basketball. And they're going crazy. They're pulling their hair out. Yeah, okay, give us something. You know, give us resolution. You know, we'll fight it. We won't fight it, whatever. But the best thing Tennessee did a couple days ago was just kind of throw themselves at the mercy of the NCAA. I've never seen a CEO of a university detail the level of alleged infractions before they even got their notice of allegations. You know, the NCAA isn't even through investigating yet. And we're talking about firing 8 people, 9 people, several level 1, level 2 violations. You saw what Dan Patrick said yesterday, detailing maybe what they were. I think it's 2 more years before you even get a decision in this.
Oh, wow, man. We're with Dennis Dott, National College Football writer with CBS Sports. With that being said, then, I'm going to put you in the CEO hat there, Dennis. You've been around a long time. You know how these things work. Would you then go down the road of Kevin Steele for a stopgap guy, like kind of like Matt Luke did there at Ole Miss? Or do you say, I'm going to get my top 3 lists regardless? And can you get some of those high-end, you know, I guess, coaches, to be honest, that's proven on your list?
Yeah, I think you can make a case for both. I think you make a case for Kevin Steele being, you know, a 1-year bridge coach / try out for the job while you take your time with, you know, with the AD and then the coach, find out what's out there, find out with more clarity maybe what you're going to get from the NCAA or how far that case is down the line than who you can attract. You know, would Tom Herman come? Yeah, he might come. Would Gus come? Yeah, he might come. But, you know, there's pluses and minuses to both of those. So do you hire an AD in a week and then hire a coach in another week, or do you take your time? I can make a case for both. I'm not saying one is better than the other, because, you know, whoever gets this job, if they get a certain person, that would be the 6th consecutive coach that's been the head coach of Tennessee without having previous Power 5 head coaching experience. And that includes Phil. You know, that the great things he did. I'm not disparaging him. I'm just saying he's on that list. So do you want to do that, or, you know, do you want to wait? And I think they need – the first thing they need is a sitting Power 5 AD. Ideally. I don't know if that person's out there. I forget the gentleman's name at East Carolina who's got ties. Is it John – help me out.
Gilbert.
Yeah, John Gilbert, the AD. He's not a Power 5 AD, but he's got ties to Tennessee, so he fits the description, I think. You got to get a solid guy in there. You got to get somebody who sat in the chair and done the job before at a high level. Then you proceed from there. You know, you do your search committee, you line up your candidates, and there may be a thought within, you know, within the administration, just let's take our time and get the right person, because look what happened when we did rush things. You know, when we didn't stand behind our guy, and we went out and got an unproven coach. And at the time, I said that when he got hired. I thought it was a good hire at the time, but he was unproven, Jeremy Pruitt. So I can make a case for both.
Well, with Dennis Dodd, National College Football writer for CBSSports.com.
Dennis, a lot of people are saying, based on how things finished under Jeremy Pruitt and based on things that were said in the news conference, which we haven't even asked you your thoughts on the news conference yet. I think a lot of people had some thoughts about the news conference, but I think a lot of people read that as, they're not going to hire Hugh Freeze.
No, that would be – now, look, I would put nothing past Tennessee. Hugh Freeze wants the job desperately. But as things stand right now, that would be thumbing your nose at the NCAA. You're in the middle of a major infractions case, and you're going to hire a guy who – I choose these words carefully because I get in trouble with Hugh whenever I say it. He was in charge when the major infractions case happened at Ole Miss. That's true. You know, it's true his name never appeared in the report. Okay, we get that. But he was the CEO running things when they eventually got a 2-year bowl ban, one self-imposed, one from the NCAA. And that probation expired like 45 days ago, November 30th, 2020. So that would be just thumbing your nose at the NCAA, not to even I haven't even gotten to Greg Sankey yet, whether he would sign off on it or not. Now, I was told, and I wrote, that he had signed off on Hugh Freeze going to South Carolina. I don't know if he'd do that at Tennessee.
On with Dennis Dodge. So let's just ask you this. I know you mentioned, you know, if you could get a Gus Malzahn, you threw out a couple of names. If you're a Vols fan, who do you see as realistic, you know, nobody's saying any groomers, John Gruden this time, but who are realistic candidates, Dennis, that if somebody called you a source right now and said, hey, Dennis, this guy's taking the job, you go, okay, that sounds right. Who are realistic candidates?
I think the two I mentioned, I think Tom Herman, unless those guys want to sit back and count their buyout money, and maybe they do. You know, I think they'd be interested. But again, there's pluses and minuses to both those guys. There's questions about Gus's development of quarterbacks at a time when Tennessee desperately needs to catch up in that area, in a league that's producing them better than any other conference in the country. I mean, if there's a league in the country that says, you got a quarterback, you got a chance, the SEC. Look what's happened the last 2 years. So they need to have somebody who's really good at quarterback development. You know, Tom Herman has, you know, there's a reason both these guys, there's reasons that both these guys were just let go at their schools. You know, I like a guy, and this may never happen, but I like a guy like Bill Clark. It may be a package deal. Mark Ingram, the AD, and Bill Clark. Talk about a guy, when his name would come up for these jobs, yeah, but it's UA. Well, you know what? You're Tennessee, and you need somebody who's got energy and drive and is a program guy, which is what he is at UAB. Took it from death, took it from nothing, and now they're building a stadium with the momentum they've created there and played for, what was it, Conference USA two out of the last 3 years. I think that would be the worst thing in the world. You know, at least he's been a head coach, and he's faced the worst thing you can coach. He's brought it back from the dead. So, yeah, I mean, there'll be other names up there. And I'll guarantee you this, none of it will happen without the hand of Jimmy Sexton in it. So start looking at his clients. I just mentioned a couple of them.
Right, right. Is there a home run guy? Is there just a name that's been floated to you that you thought, holy cow, if they could pull that off, is there just a grand slam home run guy who's realistic?
There isn't, because I don't think there is right now because of the NCAA investigation. You know, That's the first thing I said when this came down a couple of days ago. Who of substance would take this job right now? And, you got Gus and you got Tom Herman. Are those guys home runs? I don't know. I mean, the fact that I'm not saying yes right away probably says no. Would they be accepted at Tennessee? Yeah. But, you know, Tennessee has to swing big. Urban Meyer isn't out there. Nick Saban isn't coming. So who's that next person? Texas probably just got him, and Steve Sarkisian. You know, bad timing for Tennessee. So who's that next person out there? I don't know if that home run hire's out there.
On with Dennis Dodd from CBS Sports.
The NFL that I have thought of.
I put
that list together the other day, and I said, yeah, this is a pretty good list, but I don't see anybody who, yeah, this is the guy to calm the waters.
Well, Dennis, I'm going to ask the question a little bit differently, and you can have an opinion about it or not. How about a surprise, coach that nobody's talking about that could potentially be on Tennessee's list? Because she talked about integrity the whole time, Plowman. Mm-hmm. And so they may go down a route of someone of high integrity, whether they've, you know, coached at a Power Five or not.
Oh, gosh. You hit me there. I don't know. I'd have to have my list in front of me. I don't know. I'll pass on that one. I don't know if there is that person right now.
Well, let's talk about
there's a lot of guys with integrity. You know, again, Bill Clark has integrity.
Right.
But, you know, do you want a guy that coached at UAB? And, you know, maybe you do. I don't know.
And me, he can have some success at Tennessee. He's built a program for sure. I guess let's talk a little bit about basketball in that, you know, we just saw here in Nashville, the, you know, Vandy's women's basketball postponed their whole season or canceled their season. And if more of this happens, what do you think March Madness is going to look like, and how is it going to work through and navigate through all of this? Because they can't afford to have another season missed, right, in March Madness?
It's going to look a lot like football, where at the end of the season, you're driving through a car wash hoping not to get wet. And football got lucky. You know, they finished it with, 20% of the games not being played, with five different scheduling philosophies and different medical philosophies. Basketball, I thought from the beginning, would have a problem, excuse me, because you're playing three times a week. And you're playing indoors, so you're just inviting this. I think there's a chance if they don't finish it, then we play the tournament in May or something like that, just to push it off where, okay, now we have a good chance of a lot of people having the vaccine. But the way it's going now is not good. And you see, no one can answer this question for me. Why are all these women's programs canceling this season, but none of the men? I mean, it almost highlights the fact that we know, guys, there's a lot of revenue involved here. Not with women's basketball, but with men's basketball. I'm just curious. I'm just throwing your question out there. All the teams that have canceled their seasons that I know of in the power conferences have been women.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And speaking of that, you know, is there any byproduct from COVID-19 happening here, and we're still going through it? Hopefully we're going down the stretch here that will help football or basketball or other, major sports that may change or look differently in a year or so?
Yeah, I think there'll be a lot more recruiting by Zoom. A lot of coaches liked it. Mm-hmm. A lot of coaches didn't. You know, you don't get to know the person. But I had one coach tell me that when that recruit is in front of the camera on his computer looking at you, he's got nowhere to go. He can't be looking off in display. He can, but you learn a lot about him. You know, there's no phone ringing. You're not in the couch with the family in a home. You learn a lot about those people. And there's some thought from the AFCA, the American Football Coaches Association, to bring that a step further. What happens during these on-campus visits? Well, parents meet each other, recruits meet each other, and they share ideas, what they think of the school. Why not let, as part of the recruiting process officially, these parents meet by Zoom and talk about this? I think you're going to see a lot more of the recruiting process, and maybe even the recruiting calendar change because of this. Now you have, until April 15th, a dead period, and there's no guarantee that's going to be lifted. It probably will be extended, I would think. So now you're already talking about more than a year of recruiting by Zoom, and you're talking about, in this early signing period, I asked coaches about this, a lot of coaches signed players they'd never met. They'd never met in person. So I think that's a problem. You know, you want to get to know the person, but they're going to take away some good things from that. I think we're going to have that. The scheduling stuff, people have talked about, BYU and Coastal set up that game at the end of the season. Why can't everybody do that? I don't think we're going to have a bracket buster games at the end of the season to match up teams that look like good games. There's too much involved in football. You can do that easier in basketball, but there's going to be some changes, no doubt.
Well, with Dennis Dye, National College Football writer for CBS.
Dennis, since we're kind of getting deep in the weeds here on just some general NCAA stuff, one thing that just keeps bubbling out there on the back burner and is going to come to the front burner sooner than later is name, image, and likeness. And the NCAA seems to be like the bird in the commercial that keeps sticking its head under the sand. And mm-hmm. eventually that bird's got to bring its head out into the light.
Yeah, how much time do we have? This thing this was going to be the most transformative year in NCAA history because of that. It still is, but now it's just put off. The NCAA last week was supposed to vote in name, image, and likeness. It was going to take effect August 1st for the next academic year. Well, a Supreme Court case came up where the NCAA and the conferences have appealed to the Supreme Court, and they've agreed to hear this case regarding the Alston case, which has to do with benefits tethered to education and would impact NIL. The first Supreme Court case heard by the highest court since 1984, and that landmark Bursiaga case, which allowed the schools to televise their own games. You've got that. I'm told that the NCAA got spooked by that. You know, we have to wait till the Supreme Court decides. Then you had two Fridays ago, number two guy at the Department of Justice kind of rattled some sabers about antitrust in the NCAA and capping benefits for for name, image, and likeness, which is a real problem because that's how we got here in the first place. You know, if you're going to cap the benefits, that could be an antitrust concern. So what I'm told is this is now going to be decided when the Supreme Court, that all the stakeholders are being told June. They're going to decide it by then. The problem there, guys, is the Florida law, which is a very liberalized version of what the NCAA wants. And I don't mean that politically. I mean it would give a lot of benefits to the players. It goes into effect July 1st. And they think they can turn it around and get some sort of legislation ready. And I haven't even talked about how Washington may weigh in, which is significant in a now all blue administration, Senate, House, and in the White House, how they may weigh in on this. So it's going to be fascinating, and it's going to be a mess.
A fascinating mess, sort of like the show every day. I'm just kidding. All right, on the way out, we ask you a bunch of Tennessee stuff to start. I'll ask you this on the way out. How is Tennessee viewed right now, just as a program, as a sports program, if somebody's looking at the head coaching job or the AD job from the outside in, how is it viewed?
I think from the outside in, it's viewed as, they can't keep from stepping in it, everywhere they go. It's a program that should be better than it is. I wrote in my column Tuesday, I said it's got plenty of tradition, more than most schools, but Alabama's smoking most of the cigars these days. And none of that tradition means much when it's a General Nayland documentary on the SEC Network. You know what I'm talking about. There's a generation of fans and people that have grown up that weren't even alive the last time they won big. So they've got to get that back. They should be better. But again, from the inside out, they can't keep from getting out of their own way. They need somebody to take the reins. They need the AD version of Nick Saban, who in 2007 came to Alabama and said, okay, I'll come there, but I'm going to only answer to one person, and that's the president. And that's what the AD does anyway. But, he has to have complete control, have a vision, what they're going to do, how they're going to get out of this NCAA mess, and then just get better. I mean, it'll help that the transfer portal and one-time transfer now is turning into basically a free agent market, where you can sign an entire class from there if you want to. A lot of coaches are going to start doing that because high schoolers take time to develop, and they're going to transfer anyway if they don't start right away. So why not get these guys who are going to stay? But they need to start at the bottom. I mean, the thing's been burned to the ground. I said it was an athletic version of self-inflicted arson, football arson. And now they've burned the thing to the ground. They need to build it up slowly.
Dennis, great stuff, man. Thank you. Thanks for the time. If people, you mentioned several times things you'd written, CBSSports.com, or just follow Dennis on Twitter at Dennis Dodd. CBS will get you there. Dennis, thank you again.
All right, appreciate it, Dennis.
Yes, sir. Dennis Dodd laying it down. We'll keep laying it down on Blaine and Mickey. After this, 104.5 The Zone. Blaine and Mickey on 104.5 The Zone. Dennis Dodds from CBS joining us. You will want to go to the 104.5 The Zone's podcast page, and you'll want to click and you'll want to listen to that. He got into a bunch of great stuff on Tennessee and the coaching search and the AD search and the perception of Tennessee as a program now. And then Blaine asked him about the NCAA tournament, and he said for basketball, you nailed it. They can't afford not to have it again. They can't afford not to have that again. It can't not happen monetarily wise, because that's the thing that drives the entire NCAA.
Grand Poopah.
and conferences and teams, and everybody makes money off that. You can't not afford to do it again. And this was his response. You said, how do you get to the end of that thing? Yeah. And he said, it's going to be like trying to drive through a car wash without getting wet. Meaning how difficult it's going to be to finish it. And we never even talked about this, Blaine, because there's been so much. The Titans made the playoffs, and then Fulmer's out and Pruitt's out and everything else that's happened. They're taking the whole thing to your home. It's all going to Indiana. The whole stinking thing is getting bubbled up in the city of Blaine Bishop.
Oh yeah, right.
I believe Bishop Invitational City, Tournament.
I think Peyton Manning name on a couple buildings out there in the statue.
He's not from there, though.
Yeah, no doubt. But yeah, that's going to be a tough task. I think Indianapolis is excited about it, but it's going to still be a tough task, and I have to navigate through all of this, and everything's indoors, and how many fans do you let in? It's going to still be something that it's going to be tough to accomplish. But we shall see. The NFL and college football have found a way to navigate through it, as well as the hockey is in the NBA last season. So within a bubble, which they are not in now, you see them having issues with it, regardless of what the player's doing to protect themselves and their family. So this one here, man, they have to do it. So the question was led into by how we see women's basketball, you know, getting canceled and games postponed, to even canceling, you know, the season here with Vanderbilt. And he was talking about, well, they don't bring in very much revenue, if any. And that's why you're starting to see those kind of go to the wayside, and only men are still kind of keep it chugging along because they're bringing in revenue. Said he couldn't get the answer to that question, but he believes that's the reason.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, I've worked in that line of work, and I saw, here's the thing. I mean, at most schools, no sport makes revenue. At most schools, every sport costs money and loses money. What you find is, though, if you're Ball State and you're willing to get on an airplane and you're willing to fly to Miami and play for $1.5 million. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, come on down. Alabama, Auburn, USC. I can't even tell you Washington. I can't even tell you all the places that my school, Arkansas State, has been for $1 million+. With football at any level, you at least have the ability to take in these big, big chunks of money because you go play guarantee games. And once in a blue moon, somebody beats somebody, but most of the time you're getting paid to go there and lose. That's the whole premise of the thing. Now, some teams don't cooperate. They go there and they win. Most of the time, though, if you look at the overall record, that's why it's a big deal when one of those teams win. For basketball, the paydays aren't as big. For basketball, the payday is ultimately the men's NCAA tournament. Yeah, and it's shares of the tournament for all of your conference teams that make it in. So even if you don't make it, you're still rooting for your fellow conference mates to make it because it makes all of you more money. So that's how basketball makes money. But there aren't many schools at all that break even or make money historically. And here's the thing that we've seen that might have surprised some people the most in this pandemic year. Because I don't think about your friend Blaine from college. And that dude, when he graduated, he got a job. And let's say he made $25,000, because you and me graduated a little bit ago. And you're like, hey, man, you just bought a new car? You live in these apartments? And the guy's like, I made 25. I'm spending 25. Well, then you bump into that guy 5 years later, and he's got a better job, and he's making 50. He's got a better car, and he's living in it. Some people spend all that they make all the time, right? Other people sock some back. Like you probably had teammates who drove the most sensible vehicle in the world, and then other guys who pulled in the fanciest car. You didn't even know what it was.
Right.
And the one guy's like, yeah, man, I mean, it's got four wheels. It got me here.
It gets me from A to B.
Yeah. I mean, I drive I drive a 10-year-old, well, 11-year-old, whatever it is, pickup truck, because it gets me from A to B. I've never been worried about it. I love it. It gets me where I'm going. But we all know the people who spend all they make. Well, here's the one thing we found out about college athletic departments this year. They spend every penny that they make every year because everybody's losing all this money. Well, they had to lay people off, a lot of them. They had to furlough people. They had to do all this stuff. And you think about schools that have made millions and millions and millions over the years. Well, they were in financial trouble too, because they were that friend from college. Hey, man, we got this surplus. Let's build a new operations center. Done. Hey, man, we got this surplus. Let's build a new nutrition center. Done. Hey, man, we got this surplus. We need to transform the stadium. Done. They spent every nickel that they've made over the years. To me, the biggest takeaway from the big schools, the one who actually make money, will be, we're going to start putting some of that stuff back, because we've seen what can happen if we don't.
Mm. Ah, Yeah, that was a little bit of H-Town Mickey right there.
Well, I didn't mean to filibuster on inauguration
day. That was good stuff. I'm sitting there learning. Yeah, no doubt. No doubt, man. You know more about administrative universities than anybody, being that you were part of one. So, yeah, no doubt. Man.
But I don't think
Ball State was wasting any money. I'll just tell you that right now. If they were wasting some of the money I gave them, I'm be a little perturbed. But they are building a new indoor facility. I know you guys got a whole bunch of new facilities at Arkansas State as well. So just having an indoor where it snows all the time kind of puts you in the game with some of the other, you know, bigger schools to say, yeah, you know, we're in, you know, Big Ten and they have an indoor facility. We had nothing. And I was out there with hoodies and everything else on. Driving around like, dude, it is cold out here.
But I mean, that matters because the kid's going to go on a recruiting trip to your school. And if you don't have that, then he's going to go to the next school and they're going to go, where you been? He's going to go, I've been here and here. And they're going to go, yeah, what do you think it's like practicing there in December?
Yeah.
We make a bowl game. What do you think it's going to be like practicing there on, you know, December 23rd, especially up north? I mean, you can maybe get away with it in Florida, you know, South Alabama, places like that. You can't get away with that up north. Yeah, dudes, minus 27. You going to wear two pairs of sweats that day? Yeah. You know, you going
to
wear a headband?
Oh, we used to get in our cars and drive to the indoor facility and everybody where they're playing basketball, you know, the little, you know, turf field there, or, you know, not, you know, rubber floor. And they're mad because we had to kick them out. We got practice. Yeah. So we would share it. If it got really bad and we had it, we would take over. It's like the indoor track.
Until we had one, they used the ROTC building. They would literally displace the military.
Just
do a walkthrough. It'd be like, hey, man, everybody put your sneakers on. I called the captain. He just evacuated the armory. We're going to the armory. So they'd be in there running a post, you know, pattern with the tank in the end zone. It was amazing.
My. I hope nobody ran into that tank because I don't think it was moving.
No, but I'll tell you, I played a gig in there one time and I wanted to blow some stuff up because I was like that. I played a musical show in there. I'm like, you think we could? The guy's like, no, you can't shoot any of this stuff, you idiot, and you can't touch it either.
Oh, wow. Oh,
yeah.
History,
boy. Played some Whitesnake in there once upon a time. We got a second hour of the show coming up. It's a 3-hour show now. So just bathe in it. Joel Corey's going to join us in the second hour, and he's a former agent, and we got questions about what free agents are worth, and we're going to break it all down. It's about 20 minutes coming up. Blaine and Mickey, 104.5 The Zone.